Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Art and Labor podcast. We're a podcast dedicated to art workers and whatever you're dealing with in the moment. I'm Lucia Love.
And I'm OK Fox. And we're joined by a podcasting legend, folks.
Oh, yeah.
We're joined by Leslie Lee III from Struggle Session.
Thank you so much for having me and calling me a legend, which I will accept. I will accept the compliment. Absolutely.
Dude, it's true. I used to pack issues as my job for a magazine, and
magazine issues, like therapeutic ones.
I do that all the time, just on the regular. Yeah. And I would just listen to podcasts all the time, and I remember getting into Chapo when it was starting, and then hearing you on that, and then being like, oh, he has a podcast, and then I was listening to the Struggle Session from really in the beginning, and it really got me through a very horrible job. I'm in the Discord and stuff, you know.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It got me through a really horrible job too.
Yeah, I'm glad you're out of that. That's great. That was recent, right?
Yes, very recent. Yes. Now I'm a full-time podcaster. I don't feel any less busy yet, but that's fine. It's a good type of busy, doing stuff that I actually care about and, you know, care about and want to work on, instead of just empty bullshit that I didn't care about.
Totally.
That seems to be what adult life is like, though. I feel like it, no matter what my work consists of, I never feel less stressed out about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, balancing.
Oh my God, you guys, I need to paint this picture. It's really important.
It is like your bread and butter.
Oh yeah, I know, but sometimes I realize, well, you know, I mean, there's that, and then there's also all of the other jobs that I do that are way more excruciating, but yeah. I feel like an equal sense of pressure when I'm like, oh God, that's right. Okay, I've got to go do some manual labor for people, and I have to be there on time and follow orders. That's stressful, but it feels the same to do things for my own business.
Totally. I feel like I can never hang on to a job I was in that issue packing job for 4 years, and I was it was already so grating, but then it fell apart for the listeners know it fell apart for a much bigger reason than myself, but now I'm at a job that at a store I really like, but it's still so grating, you know. Mm-hmm. It's still
that's how it goes. Doesn't matter what the work consists of. Leslie, how are you? How's your life and full time podcasting?
You know, it's interesting. I have more time to actually watch and, you know, read and look at the stuff that I do for the podcast. But I then, you know, screwed myself over by coming up with the idea that, oh, now we're going to do a mini series on top of the episodes we're already doing. So we're doing two bonus episodes every week. Patreon.com/strugglesession. We give you two bonus episodes. Everybody else is just giving you one for that $5. Just to let you, I'm not throwing shade at anyone, but I'm just saying we give you two bonus episodes every week, including our Watching Watchmen podcast, where we watch the awful HBO series Watchmen for you so you don't have to. It is a heinous, heinous show. But I actually think, and a lot of people have told me, they really enjoy us talking about how bad the show is. There's something very cathartic about being able to hear that this show that everyone is trying to convince you is good is actually bad, and having us explain in great detail why, and being very fair about it too.
No, I always appreciate that about you and Jack, that you understand a lot of the weird bullshit minutia that goes into producing and writing a show. you guys mentioned on an episode of Watching Watchmen, like, oh, they have these like stupid acorn communicator things, and like, oh yeah, like that's like a great thing they could market at Comic-Con or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the product placements. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just all this little shit that they can send, either do at Comic-Con, or they'll send packages to reviewers, because with Watchmen specifically, they sent the first 5 episodes to all the reviewers. I haven't looked at the box they sent them, but I'm sure it's like full of that
bullshit. And then
everyone was like,
oh, the first episode is bad. And then they're like, well, we watched 5 and just you wait or whatever. And it's just like,
yeah, I think it'd be like a fun drinking game if you watch something like, you know, say you're watching Watchmen, but with all your friends. And then anytime you see a product placement, you like take a drink.
Oh,
or like... anything that's manufactured, like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. The whole
full-blown simulacra.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would... I don't even think they would have made it to the giant blue dildo before they had died of alcohol poisoning.
So heinous.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. I did watch all of Leftovers, and it did, like, grip me, but I recognize that. I think it's like, it's just a lot of like writing tricks that Lindelof does to just like be like, oh, I'm setting the seeds for something crazy to happen. And then
it
doesn't really pay off, but it's like feels like.
Dude, nothing is crazy anymore. Stop trying to get
the world
me excited.
The world is way too shocking. And like,
It's not even shocking, though. It's not. It's like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. Are there fascists? Is there going to be like another fascist somewhere? I don't know. Let's see. Maybe that's a little foreshadowing there.
Yes.
I did a writing trick.
I mean, not even like it's like even like
mystery. Well, yeah, because the movie that we're talking about.
Oh, right, of course.
Ba-da-da-da.
Oh man. Well. Oh yeah. Sorry, I was still thinking in Lindelof universe.
Oh yeah.
We really don't have to talk about that anymore.
I just want to talk about things that I hate.
No. I honestly, I didn't hate The Leftovers. It just like, I just think I kind of recognize that it's the prestige veneer and the manufacturing behind that. I can recognize that that's at play with all these HBO shows.
Oh, totally. Yeah. They got a brand.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But yeah, we watched Marathon Man. That's what Lucia was alluding to.
Oh yeah, I'm excited that you all agreed to watch Marathon Man. I know that it's like a really goofy 70s style thing, but I felt like it was kind of apropos of the times that we're experiencing now, where we're realizing that like a lot of the you know, a lot of the issues that we thought were over, or we just weren't paying attention to, maybe in a broader sense, have always been there. And
well,
we have
well,
like,
something else we talk about on our show a lot is the era of late 60s and mid 70s. Like,
I know I'm a total nerd. Yeah. I think if you have a supercut of Art and Labor, you'll hear me going like, "No, but the Bader Meinhof was right."
Yeah, I'm really happy I finally watched this movie. It was kind of interesting that you said it was goofy, because I remember, you know, this movie in the background of my childhood, but I never actually sat down to watch it. I always thought of it as like this prestige drama with Dustin Hoffman, but that had an infamous scene with like a dentist like torture scene. But that's all I knew about
it. That they cut out.
Yeah, but I never had anybody actually, you know, recommend it to me personally. I would just see it on like list of greatest films to watch. So I didn't really know what to expect going in, especially since the title doesn't say what the film is about at all.
It's true.
Yeah, but I was really like happy to, you know, finally take the time and watch it. And I did find that it's not like this, you know, stoic prestige piece. It's like this kind of schlocky spy thriller, but the very, very, very good one.
Yeah. Talk about like the suspense that gets built up, because it's like, I feel like the first half of the movie, it's not really clear what any of the characters are, like how everything is connected.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah. I like how it unfolds a lot. And And yeah, and I just love looking at that era of New York City also.
Cadillacs.
I was like all in like right away. I was like, oh shit, it's set in like it's set in early 70s New York. There's like an angry Jewish guy ramming a Nazi into a gas tanker in like the opening scene.
Yes!
Like,
yeah.
I'm totally sold.
It starts off like a joke. So a Nazi and a Jewish New Yorker get into a drag race, and it goes from there in a completely not very predictable way. You would have no idea why, and then the film like immediately shifts to like this college student, then these people in France, and you don't really know what's going on, but it all comes together very, very well.
Yeah, I love that idea that there's kind of like a mystification of all of the characters' roles, just because like during that time was also when I think like the OSI branch was like started to specifically like start hunting Nazis. So there, that was something that people like at the time I think were maybe aware of. I don't really know what the general understanding was, but like you know, there were so many German Nazis that got like passports or visas or whatever to come to America and become naturalized citizens just to like fight the Soviet Union with all of their spy secrets. So it was this time where everyone was like, oh, who, what was everyone's background? And right. Like, how can you check up on it? And like, what is everybody doing in, there was like some famous Nazi dude who lived in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
Who I guess like, yeah, I don't know if that was like an inspiration for this or not. But...
Well, the older brother, I think, was he explicitly supposed to be OSI? Like, or was he just like general intelligence?
Of, yeah, like, I think it was really... like general intelligence, because it never really specified, but that is like the role. There were yeah. Literally like all of these spy games going on, which, yeah.
Yeah, because he was like the... Yeah, I guess we're cutting ahead, but like it does cut to France pretty early on. Or is it France or is it... It's France because they're speaking French, right?
Well, I think, I'm not sure, because it's like the woman says that she's like, or like Elsa, she says that she's from Switzerland, but then
French.
She's German, and then there's like,
yeah.
There's
oh,
like a.
Back in the 70s, they spoke, that was like, right, that was like a dominant language.
French
back
was
then.
The international finance language.
Yeah, that's right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where the brother is initially. Maybe it's London, because the jeweler guy talks about, or, you know, the Nazi.
He does say opera is French, though. He says it's French right. Opera, so it's very boring.
Yeah!
And the guy, and the Nazi guy is eating a little baguette with his food. So
right!
Maybe it's French.
Like, yeah, the thing is that I think because there's so much confusion in the film that it's just like, you realize that the plot developments coalesce in like the second third of the film. So maybe it helps to talk about where people end up and then like backtrack as to like when you realize they start getting into these situations. Because we mentioned the brother, and so Dustin Hoffman has a brother who says that he's like an oil tycoon.
Yeah.
But is actually a kind of OSI secret Nazi hunter dude.
Well, I don't think he hunts Nazis because he's like working with this one, right? Or maybe because he's a double agent. He works for a place called the I guess, yeah. He does say, all right, whenever we do this, it goes both ways. He says he works for a division. I think we can, it's a fictional branch of the U.S. government. I think we can assume it's just supposed to be the CIA. And, you know, he's kind of in this bond with this, you know, because as we all know, like, this is what the CIA did. They weren't like, they were like hiring like Nazis and also like some of the Japanese war criminals. They were recruiting them and working for them, and if they provided anything useful. So
because this
you know, this film kind of doesn't paint a very positive light about the way the U.S. government, you know, approach Nazi hunting, because this guy was just able to buy a bunch of agents off, basically.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think like the agents that like I think the way like the even the real OSI would justify it would be like, oh, well, we helped some Nazis, but it was to kill worse Nazis or something. And I feel like...
Well, I think it just all started developing in different... Because the CIA actually was like the ones who were operating, I think, like Project Paperclip and like Operation Condor and like all of the space medicine programs that were like doing weird Joseph Mengele stuff out on people.
So wild.
Yeah, I don't know. But then the OSI was like specifically trying to collect all of these people who had been naturalized into American societies all across the country. They were invited and then they were hunted, which makes me think it's all just a big game.
Yeah. Yeah, and this film does suggest that it is just this big game that the main Nazi, Zell, ends up, because he's getting older and his time to cash out, he kind of takes the game too seriously and takes it too far and gets everyone involved killed.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, if he would just have chilled out, basically, that would have been... his brother, too. I guess it's, you know, unreasonable to expect, you know, a couple of Nazi brothers to be level-headed and reasonable in their old age. But if they had just, like, chilled out just a little bit, they would have been fine and living with, you know, millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, totally.
Nobody the wiser.
Zell as, like, this, like, gluttonous... like guy who just wants more and more. And
yeah,
like he's being fed like in this the first scene with the brother, like the brother gives him like the box of diamonds.
Yeah,
in the chocolates, and he's like, "Oh, I'm supposed to be on a diet," and oh, clump clump clump, I'm eating a bunch of chocolates.
Yeah.
And,
like, yeah.
And then also they're diamonds, like under the chocolates. Like it's like very funny foreshadowing for the end of the movie. But
I know.
But yeah, he's just portrayed as this like just greedy. Because if he could have lived out a nice, pretty decadent life in France or wherever the fuck he was, like, but he had to come to New York after his brother dies because him and his brother both have the key to this safe box full of diamonds stolen from people who were in the Holocaust.
Well, it's crazy because the diamonds weren't stolen. This is another weird little thing. It was like so Zell was like a dentist who was taking gold teeth
right.
out of people
right.
and then trading them for diamonds.
Yeah,
so there was
right.
this whole process of also like,
ugh.
Yeah, like the blood money goes so deep. And ugh. Then like all of the layers of...
It's a cool movie.
Yeah.
It has a lot of cool like motifs and like, yeah, themes and symbols throughout. Like, I just love that because in the famous torture scene he's doing dental work
which is so fucked.
So fucked.
I mean, because everybody has been to the dentist and knows how painful this stuff is when they're not trying to hurt you, but goddamn, those scenes, and you don't really see anything or like hear anything because they cut the scenes very short. Like way,
yeah.
way, way short than they were supposed to originally. And
yeah.
man, it still like hurts. It hurts to watch.
Yeah, because apparently there was a longer cut of this movie and they cut like 10 minutes of it out because audiences found it too gratuitous.
Yeah.
Could you imagine a time where audience found things too gratuitous?
Well, that was a funny period because it was like they were all about the titties in the 70s and like also smacking people in the face a lot.
Yeah.
But they weren't into Hostel or like Saw.
Mm. Yeah, it wasn't nowhere near that yet. But yeah, another dynamic I really liked about the movie was the two brothers, the contrasting brothers. Like the one brother was a Columbia grad student.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other brother was this like, you know, double agent, rich guy who hit the brother has this like the Dustin Hoffman brother. What's his name? Babe.
Yeah, basically.
Babe and Doc. They're nicknames, but yeah, that's what they're called the whole film.
Yeah.
They're like when Babe's talking about their dad was a communist and
Who is killed.
Who is killed. And it's like, oh, it was a suicide, he was a drunk, and it was like, but
he was not suicided.
His professor at Columbia was like trying to tease it out of him, or not tease it, like force him to talk, like confront the McCarthyism and like his father, and like his professor knew his father and stuff. And it was neat because like, it's weird to think about now because the institutions now have gotten so like defanged and insipid. But like in the 70s, a lot of the institutions were full of communists for real.
Right.
Like, and actively trying to instill that into education and like and reconfigure education and like
people. I mean, there was just a lot more. Yeah, there were a lot more people doing like crazy vigilante work in institutions, but then also like there were like the Jewish Avengers going around and killing Nazis and stuff. Like, you know, leftists were just cool at this time.
Oh yeah, what was the thing? The quote that I texted you, Lucia, like every worker with a grievance is building a pipe bomb in his basement right now was one of the lines.
Yeah. Because there was like a baby doll that exploded in a carriage when Doc was walking by one, I think.
Yeah.
And they mentioned like 3 or 4 strikes going on, like different disparate strikes. The baggage handlers definitely one of them they're on strike, and they're mentioned throughout the films. Like there's all this, you know, civil unrest from the workers going on in the background.
Yeah, seriously, like on the radio there's like they mention a different strike, and then like
And then there were all the climate activists on the bikes, and I was like, oh my God, this is so Extinction Rebellion, with the lady who was like wearing a flower pot on her head.
I was
wondering
if they were supposed to be the diggers or something.
Oh.
I don't know.
Well, weren't they in San Francisco?
No, they were in San Francisco, that's right. I was just trying to think of like who they were supposed to be, but there were groups like that in that time. Like, you know, we talk about them in our early episodes of Art and Labor, all these different types of groups, whether it's to like, you know, actual worker organizing, whether it's anarchist bombings, whether it's
just all the different performances
doing a performance, all that was happening in the 70s, and it feels like I love about stuff from the 70s is seeing like a similar time to what we're in now.
I think. Yeah. But they had more. I feel like they just had a little more gumption.
They did have more. They definitely did. Yeah, I mean, they like the fact that there was like these real unrest was able to happen like on the regular, like in America, strikes like don't like we haven't had like a really good, I don't know like. like as far as like baggage handlers, like I don't know.
We're getting there. I think we're just ramping back up.
Yeah, we are. I mean, like nurses, teachers, like it's happening. Even just the tiny work stoppage of the airline workers that happened to protest the Trump travel ban. Was huge, and that was like not even an actual strike,
right?
Like, so it's like starting to happen, but it's cool to see it happening in the like in a different time.
The movie was great just to show the sort of portrait of all of these different activities going on, and I guess in contrast, like, you know, all of the protesters and everyone sort of that you see tangentially to the main characters have a very clear demands. Mm-hmm. But then we're following these main characters that are more, they're like their motives are possibly obscured, or like their allegiances are constantly shifting. Mm-hmm. I mean, except for Dustin Hoffman, who is sort of like the protagonist that seems to be having this dawning awareness story arc where he's like, what? No, I didn't know I was that deep in it, even though, like, why wouldn't you know, because your father was killed and you kept the gun?
Yeah, seriously, it's yeah, if we're continuing chronologically, where were we? Did we get to the woman? What's her name?
Oh yeah,
Elsa.
We did talk about Elsa.
Elsa.
Yeah. Elsa enters his life at school.
He follows
into
her the
home
library
like a fucking creeper.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Look, it's yeah. look. We look. It's hard to because it was set up as a honeypot.
There's no phones.
It's set up as a honeypot.
Oh, it's true.
It didn't have phones, so I don't know. Like, it's hard to judge the character because that's what you know. She has set it up for it to be that way. So
right.
I don't know. I don't know what kind of training they give these Nazi double agents to make people cancel themselves, but I think she was exuding some sort of energy on him that he couldn't help. I think we're not going to cancel Babe.
Was playing hard to get a real thing in the 70s, or was it something that our parents just made up? I don't know.
Oh no, it was real.
It was real.
there are articles about it.
Fine.
There actually are. There's like dating articles. I guess there's more like a 50s thing, but it would be like, if you want to meet a man, you should go to a public place and act helpless.
Yeah, and she left her book with her name and address yes. written in it. Like, is the book that important? And yeah, he followed the trail.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't even thinking about it in terms of a honeypot because, like, he makes it sound like, oh, I took the book on purpose or something.
Yeah,
because I wanted to follow you, but
that's
yeah, no,
that bravado.
But yeah, they become an item. But then, yeah, like we have said. Like, she double crosses him. I forget how. This part of the movie is blurry to me because I fell asleep at one point and then watched the rest in the morning.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so they're dating, Elsa and Babe, and they go to dinner with
Well,
Doc.
His brother comes
oh,
back.
Right, the dinner.
Yeah, his brother comes back. Pretends to try to murder him in his sleep, as one does
oh my God.
To your younger brother. And I just want to say this brief scene of brotherly love between them. I love it. I love seeing brothers on screen who love and care about one another.
It is so nice when they're like just like touching each other's faces and being like, "I love you." Like, like I was like, "Wow." Also, I don't know. I read about this after. I didn't catch it at first, but the brother, when he's the rich brother, Doc, when he's in the hotel room, he's saying, "Janny, get your ass over here. Get your ass over here."
Yeah.
Janny is actually the cop. The cop's name is Janway.
Is he a cop? I thought he was another agent who just pretended to be a cop for a little bit.
I mean, the agent cop, whatever.
The agent cop.
Yeah.
Agent cop, yes.
Who knows who anyone is.
But yeah, apparently in the book version, they're explicitly lovers.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's part of it.
They changed a couple of things from the book. I guess everyone was more mad about the ending that changed, but we're working our way there. Because I guess in the book there was just the Babe character just shoots Zell in the park,
right?
Just goes up and is like, blam blam blam, now you're dead.
And then just yeah.
And then when they were making the movie, they were like, that's not very
so
cinematic.
Much better.
Yeah, right.
The movie ending
is
fucking
better. Yeah,
rocks. So fucking cool. But no, let's wait. Let's keep going.
Yeah, so we're
with
back.
The dinner, because the dinner scene is really cool,
yeah.
too. Like,
so
I
the
don't
dinner
know.
Scene happens because Babe writes to Doc.
Oh, yeah.
And is like, oh, me and my new girl Elsa just got jumped by some people in the park. Anyway, hope you're doing good. Bye.
Yeah, that jumping scene is really like disturbing because and it's like two guys in suits who like just beat the shit out of both of them for seemingly no reason. I don't know what New York was like in the mid 70s, but I would gather that if you get the shit out of you by like not some like, you know, misfit teens, but like two guys in suits, you would think a little bit more on it than just, oh, I guess I was just mugged by these two businessmen.
Yeah. Yeah. At least like Doc asked, like, oh, was it teenagers? And they're like, no, it was guys in suits. And then Doc was like, oh no.
Yeah, oh, they're back.
No. the Nazis are I don't know. It's weird because he's all like Doc is also a Nazi sympathizer, so it's hard to.
I don't feel like he sympathizes with the Nazis. He's just, you know, playing. He's just doing his job, really, which is I guess as a CIA agent, his job is to you know help the Nazis who help him.
Some Nazis, yeah. But like Lucia is saying, in the greater service of like destroying the Soviet Union and weeding out the communists.
Yeah, he's definitely like a capitalist figure from what everyone is like portraying.
Yeah. He talks about how like his dad would hate what his brother has become.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he thinks that's just because he's an oil baron, but little does he know, it's because he's a CIA agent.
Which, you know, yeah, are basically two sides of the same coin.
But yeah, so then Elsa is like uncovered in this amazing little kind of, I don't know, what is that called when you just make up a false narrative and then someone agrees to it?
I'm not sure if there's a name for it, but like it's a really nice, well, it's really well written scene where we see that, you know, Doc is a pretty good fucking secret agent in spite of some of the fuck ups he does earlier, like going back to his hotel room after his contact has been killed.
I thought that too. I was like, what are you, just get out. Like, what are you doing?
But yeah, we see that he immediately like sees something is up with Elsa and sees through her bullshit. I don't know why he still sticks around after the fact and doesn't tell his brother really what's going on, but yeah, I guess he's still trying to keep kayfabe up and keep the whole thing together. But he immediately sees that she's like a fucking plant by the Zell guy, and his brother is just like, what the fuck? And I think, you know, as somebody just watching the film, you don't really up until that point suspect Elsa. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to connect the dots. But once the brother does get there, it kind of all comes together really quickly.
Yeah, I was kind of connecting it there, like a little bit, but not like, yeah. But you could read it either way, because because like the brother is trying to say like, oh, she's just doing it for immigration, or she's just
whatever. It's like, oh, she's just trying to become a citizen too. But at the time, it's like, who's trying to become a citizen but all these damn Nazis? And all of a sudden, she starts talking German, and she like switches over from her French. It was such a cool moment to watch her, like, because she's acting this veneer, and then watching the veneer break down, and then she just like this other accent starts coming through, and then she runs away in this moment of like, I don't know. It just felt kind of well-timed the way that she, like, stresses out and gets busted and then is like, oops, gotta go.
But yeah, but like Leslie was saying, like, the brother, like, Doc was trying to say, like, yeah, save face, not break kayfabe, but, like, if I were the brother, I would have just gotten babe into somewhere else entirely. Like, it's like, why?
Oh, yeah.
Would you risk, like, he thinks he can go, but, like, yeah, so then, like, the next scene is probably the one where he goes to confront Zell and is like, get my brother out of this, and...
Yeah.
And Zell stabs him with his little arm...
His cool wrist knife.
Yeah. on that crazy fucking fountain. Like, so 70s. I love it. I love that imagery.
The only thing I was disappointed on, we didn't get the blood in the fountain, but that's because he had to drag his ass up to his brother's house so we can get that the shot of him dying in the fountain.
Yeah, that would have been real nice.
Seriously.
I love all those colors and shapes. Like, I'm just like,
yeah, all the, yeah, it's so majestic. Back when we used to have public space in the city.
Oh my God. That and like back when like movies weren't entirely like fabricated, like computer generated.
Oh yeah, like they actually used scenery for this movie.
Yeah, it's like incredible. Like, I don't know, even like all the shots of New York, all the real cars, like yeah. all that shit. I'm like, this, just eat that up. I'm like, this is the best.
It is. I loved all the housing stock too. Like, and then all of the people who'd hang out on stoops and everything. Like,
yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, so and you still get that vibe in Brooklyn and Queens a little bit, but that's just gone in Manhattan.
Yeah, exactly. There's like nothing like they're that. On the Upper West Side.
Yes,
it's yeah
wild. it's like in the end, in the beginning scene supposed to be like Yom Kippur. There's like actually like people out and like doing community stuff.
Yeah,
and, like the jewelry district too. Like,
oh, I know. Yeah, the Diamond District was huge. Yeah. It's still pretty big.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I like just going through this movie chronologically with you guys. It's very fun. I feel like I'm on Struggle Session.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I just wonder if it feels like there's any sort of like room for subterfuge in our lives now, in a way. Like, that's one thing I wondered while watching this movie. I was interested to ask you all because, like, it feels like because of the way that we're all so visible in our communications, or like everything is being documented or like recorded, or you know, I don't know. It's like hard to pretend to be something else now. And I wonder if a story like this is even possible.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm trying to think of... Yeah, what do you think, Leslie?
I think it would be hard to... I mean, you know, part of the reason we don't get too many, like, spy thrillers like this, or when we do get them, they're always set in the 70s or the
80s. Yes, yeah, they're period
pieces. Yeah, is to get rid of, like, the problem of, like, cell phones. Like, how much of this film would change if Babe, like, just had a cell phone on him? Where he could like record video of the guys in suits beating him up, or like when the lady sees Zell on the street, she would just like put it on her Snapchat instead of like getting hit by the car or whatever. Like a lot of the film would be very, very different with modern technology. I'm not sure how many, you know, people or writers have come up with a way to do this type of spy thriller in the age of technology that is more interesting than just people like sitting on their phones and playing with
right.
computers.
Right. Yeah, stuff. The ones that come to mind for me are the modern Sherlock and Black Mirror. But like not like those are so mediocre also.
Yeah.
In different ways, but they at least kind of like figured out some ways to incorporate like technology into a mystery narrative.
I just feel like those like text bubbles that we see in so many films, including some pretty good ones, are going to age like really poorly.
Oh yeah, they already have totally. Yeah. I liked how those shows could do it, but it's just, I wish like a better writing team and a better directing team were making stuff like this.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting project to try to resuscitate like mystery in cinema. I mean, like you're saying, it's hard. Actually incredibly difficult now that we also have like such a huge lexicon and like like a popular understanding of tropes and everything is just sort of like, I don't know. It's we're more knowledgeable than we were then, but we also have a different technological field. And like, I don't know. I'm excited to see what Jordan Peele comes up with his. I mean, his series is going to be set in the 70s, but like, The Hunt is got to be in production now, right?
Probably. And I was reading that he was really into this movie when he was making Get Out.
Yeah.
So that's funny you bring him up.
Oh, yeah, because he's making a Nazi hunting TV show.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I forgot that that's the premise. That's great.
Yeah, it's set in the 70s.
Yeah, I wonder what the politics of that are going to be like.
I know. I think it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
But it's on Amazon, so we're not allowed to watch it.
You can't watch anything on Amazon? Yeah, just pirate. Steal everything.
Yeah.
Although I did sign up for a trial for the Criterion channel to watch this without commercial interruption. You can watch it with commercials on Tubi for free, so you can do that if you don't feel like pirating Marathon Man.
I didn't know it was on Criterion. My friend just gave me her Criterion password.
Hell yeah.
But I watched it on Putlocker, which is the classic pirating website.
Yeah, me too.
Cute little pirates.
I don't like hearing Zizek on Chapo be like, I'm waiting to see Joker until I can pirate it, has made me feel very brazen. And like, yeah, everyone should just pirate. We got it, like, with all these like new streaming platform, like millions of fucking, we can't just take this. Like, we're not gonna fucking pay for 7 streaming services. It's not gonna happen.
Oh yeah, forget it. Y'all fight it out amongst yourselves for the boomer bucks.
Seriously. But yeah, I think it's a good question about, like, yeah, the thing too is like, oh well, think about Black Panther, right, where they have to like make the CIA guy the good guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like that's what we're dealing with like contemporary filmmaking. Like,
oh yeah, like the changing relationships between all of these archetypal characters. That yeah,
yeah, or like the pressure that they have from the military to put the military in a positive light.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting also the lack of police representation in this film. Like there were so many times when you could have seen like cops come in at every angle, but it was really just like when the murder happened and then everyone was like all the detectives came.
There are more cops now, right? There are more cops in New York now. There's got to be.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah, and they have tanks.
Yeah. Yeah. The cops are useless in this film. They don't do shit. They don't help anybody. They just like scoop up or harass a victim and scoop up his brother's dead body. That's basically it. They don't do it. Cops will never help you. You have to take extract justice with your own hands or the gun that was used to kill your father.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Wait, and let's talk about the torture scene where he's tortured. He's so his brother is murdered and comes to his doorstep and dies just before he could say anything. He just like says his name, and then the detective comes and one uniformed cop, which the cops in the 70s wore those fucking leather jackets and look like insane. by the way, sorry, tangent. fashion tangent.
It's important. It's a look.
I mean,
but what about him though?
Right. Sorry. So the detective comes and is like, "I'm gonna use you as bait." And
yeah.
Is that all right? It's dangerous, but like we think that, you know, whoever killed your brother is after you, and so they're gonna come back and stuff. And they do come back, and he's kidnapped and wakes up in a torture chair. And
so crazy. And then the classic line, "Is it safe?"
Oh yeah, yeah. Is it safe?
Yeah, Laurence Olivier comes out.
Is it safe?
And is it safe? Oh my God!
Just yelling at him over and over again. Is it safe? Is it safe? And
yeah.
Like, I don't know what you're referring to.
Look, again, this is, you know, Nazis showing that they're not too reasonable. You think they would understand at some point that this guy just does not know what was going on before they like ruin his mouth and his teeth and all that shit and fake their own deaths. And like they have this big convoluted thing where it's just like, he is just a college student. Why do you think his brother would tell him all that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they can't be sure. Maybe he's just so good at lying that he he'll take all the torture.
Oh, he's a double agent too.
He just loves diamonds. That's his thing. You can tell by the way that he lives that Babe loves diamonds.
But it's a really amazing scene, and it's so effective. It's so gruesome, like because everyone has gone to the dentist. Everyone knows what that feels like.
Yeah,
like it's so powerful. Like it's like they're so good. It's good filmmaking. I was like,
I was physically like.
Like I was looking at the reviews of this movie, they're all like mediocre, like middle of the road. Well, I guess there was an Oscar nom for
Laurence Olivier. Laurence
Olivier, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, other than that, it seems to be like middle of the road on like Rotten Tomatoes or whatever.
Oh yeah. Well, people are really weird about what constitutes a good film from certain eras. Mm. And I don't know if
standards
everybody's
higher in the 70s.
Well, no, I think they were just different, yeah. You know, because this isn't the way we treat, I don't know, any subjects now. We don't
have
hammy, overacted, melodramatic scenes where people are like flailing their limbs and screaming to like get emotions across.
Well, I do have to say, though, I have to, you know, defend the film a little bit. I think the only one who does overacting is Dustin Hoffman. He's bad at certain points of this film. I think everybody else does it pretty well. And Olivier, you know, is just perfect as just this creepy villainous and over the top without being too over the top.
Yeah, I like the over.
Oh, yeah. He's so, it's crazy. I didn't know that. So in the filming of this, Laurence Olivier, like total master of the craft, he actually like had cancer during this time and was like getting treatments and stuff, but just kept it totally together. And then had this thing with Dustin Hoffman where Dustin Hoffman was trying to get into the feeling of being tortured. So he was like doing all this method stuff and he was like, I don't know, just abusing himself. And so Laurence Olivier was like, you know, with his cancer and everything, was like, buddy, why don't you just act?
Yes, yeah. A very famous story from Hollywood, like, because he just did not understand, like, what the fuck this kid was doing. Like, I think he would, like, stay out all night or something. Before the torture scene, he would, like, stay up all night. So he looked and felt like shit, and he was just like, have you ever considered acting?
And yeah!
That fucking rocks.
Yeah. I know!
That's so funny. But, my point was, then they let up, the torturers let up, and give him clove oil on it. Which is like an old-timey anesthetic for teeth. The like detective guy rescues him, and it's like, to Leslie's point, like the cops aren't actually going to save you because turns out he like took him for a ride, like he was rescuing him, but was just trying to. It was part of the interrogation, and he was working with the Nazis as well.
Yeah, and that's what I guess. Like, I was thinking that right now we have so many cop movies where it's like Will Smith is just a really good cop, you know, and we just have to like figure it out. But like, or you know, it's,
yeah, or the Watchmen main character, right, Leslie? Like,
the main character of the Watchmen is a black female police officer who is the good cop. She also has like a white cop who is also another good cop that she's friends with that she went to. And I found out recently one of the people in the writers, when one of the black writers that they, you know, hint at, you know, help create this show in order to give it, you know, this cultural gravitas.
Tokenizing, literally tokenizing.
Yeah, one of the women, one of the black writers is a black woman who used to be a cop.
Oh my God.
Weird.
So fucking ridiculous. I must find, there's a great thread from this PhD candidate. I can't remember their name, but they have an ongoing thread of like this, of the new trope of the black cop in cinema of the past, like, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
No, it's a total thing.
There was just like a movie that just came out about a black female police officer, like an action movie that we used to star like late era Bruce Willis, but now it's a young black woman.
Yeah.
Right. Because, yeah, we have to change the way that law enforcement is received in the media because, you know, that'll change the way it's received in reality. Everyone will be like, oh, no, cops are actually cool because like, I watched a movie.
Yeah, literal propaganda. It's wild. But it's like even like the things like even like Mike Schur shit. Right. Even like the Office is like a neoliberal propaganda. And like that guy now does the Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is like friendly black gay cop. Like the nice television show from The Office people. Like,
yeah. Back in the 70s, though, you know, things were gritty and real and they didn't feel like they had to lie to you, man. Everyone was in cahoots.
Well, also like the studios, there were more of them and not just like two or three or whatever we have now.
Oh, God.
So yeah. There's a little more like independence, I feel, when making media in general.
Yeah, they're just learning the possibilities for brainwashing techniques.
But yeah, what happens next, Lucia?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so now we're in the part of the movie where so Babe has been kidnapped by Zell because Zell is looking for something that he wants to know is if it's safe or not. And Zell's already killed Doc, his brother, because he's on the hunt looking for his diamonds and everything.
He knows where they are. He just is afraid that somebody will steal it from him when he picks them up. So that's why he's killing everybody.
Right, yeah, that actually makes it so much worse. He's not even really trying to get information. He's just, like, paranoid. Oh, God. Yeah.
And he should be, because then when he goes to the Diamond District...
He's spotted.
He's spotted by several Jewish people, like, including a Holocaust survivor.
Right.
Like...
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's a really interesting scene, and it seems kind of over the top, but it's totally within the realm of possibility of what could have happened in New York, like during that
time. Oh, definitely.
Like...
I mean, there were pretty different rates of like survivors that were actually allowed to have American visas versus like the Nazis that were. It's kind of weird too. I guess I was reading that like after the concentration camps were like liberated, there still were prisoners that were just being held there as indefinite detention because they weren't sure like where to put people or what to do, and they didn't have an infrastructure to start taking care of people or something because it was like some cities were entirely bombed out. So they were like, oh, I guess you're just gonna stay in the camp and then we'll just take these Nazis and bring them to America. Ugh. It's like totally insane to me, but survivors also made it back here, and like the tension of having those groups like all matriculate into the same neighborhoods.
Honestly, I want to show this movie to my dad and uncle because I feel like they would get a lot out of it. Like, because my family's New York story is like kind of similar to my dad also was a grad student at Columbia.
Oh, wild!
And his dad was a communist, and I don't know. I'm like, I wonder if he saw it. I've meant to text him.
There you go. Watch Marathon Man, folks. It'll help you get in touch with your dad.
Yes. My dad, who's like a MSNBC poison, like lib now, so disappointing.
Oh, man. And you know, that word MSNBC poison, how we used to talk about Fox News, I just saw it today. I think Michael Herion, he's the black guy on Twitter with like the flak, he wearing like a flak jacket or something. He has a goatee. You've probably seen him like making some, you know, saying how we need to invade this country or that country, but oh, for liberal reasons. Well, he was on MSNBC today saying that Donald Trump has been a Russian asset since the 70s, since he married Ivanka. So that's how is that different than what like Fox News was doing to people, you know, 10 years. It's the same thing now. I spent so much of my life pushing back against the notion that MSNBC and Fox News were two sides of the same coin, but now they like literally are. Like they're just
Yes. Yeah, no, it is a good reflection point that like we've gotten this far where we can recognize like what's being told to us, like, and what's happening like media wise, like it's.
I just kind of take it as a given, but that's, you know.
Well, you've always been that way, I feel.
I have a problem with authority. I heard that when I was a kid.
I don't know. When I was a kid, I with my dad would watch like the Rachel Maddow and like Jon Stewart, and like I did watch that shit.
Actually, when I was a kid, my dad and I watched the History Channel.
That's great.
And cool. And then we would build model tanks and planes.
that is cool. My brothers like to do shit like that, but I was never really. I was more into anime.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, there's a lot of knives and chemicals and little torches and stuff involved.
We would there was an activity my brothers and I used to do where we would burn plastic in our driveway, like an army. I specifically remember burning army men.
Oh yeah,
on a pencil. And
so you were basically like the evil kid in Toy Story.
Exactly.
Aw. Leslie, how about you? When you were a kid, were you burning plastic?
Burning plastic? No, because I like
a little dumpster child.
No, because I like my toys too much. I did destroy my toys, but just from like no more playing with them. I had a bunch of He-Man, and I don't think they were really built to last. But it was never like purposely destructible because I didn't know if I was getting the next one. So I never went out of my way to jack them up.
That's real. Yeah. No, my good toys I took care of, but army men, there's so many of them.
Oh yeah.
Who cares?
Jeez.
Also, they're imperialist thugs.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's talk about the ending.
All right. Yeah, I feel like we've gotten up there. So like,
they do go upstate, and like it's a trap, but he has his father's gun, and he like Babe is able to escape. The trap.
Well, that's the moment where Babe decides that he is capable of committing acts of violence, yes, against these people who have destroyed his family. And I think everything kind of like leads up to this question of like whether or not it's acceptable to kill murderers,
right,
in a way. Like, you know, there's all this confusion and there's all this tension and there's all of this torture and pain and, you know, emotional strife. And then it's like, no, actually, you guys are trying to ambush me and I'm trying to escape with my life because I want to write a dissertation. So if you're going to come here and you're going to try to kill me, I'll shoot you instead.
an assumably pro-communist dissertation, too.
Yeah.
Which is, like, an interesting part of the hero aspect.
This is the point where leftists decide to take up arms. The same gun that is used to kill their own. They turn it back on the assailants. And then all the crooked detective spy dudes are like, ha-ha, what's up? You know, we're gonna get you. You're cornered. And he's like, no way. Blam, blam, blam. And they're like, all right, we'll tell you where Zell is. We're sorry.
Yeah.
The one living guy
tells him where the bank is, the safety deposit where all the diamonds are.
Oh, right.
And that's where he can find Zell. And that's, and Zell is there, like, yeah, like a little Augustus Gloop motherfucker, like scooping out all the diamonds.
Yeah,
like.
And this one, and this one, and this one. But then, like, yeah, and then they have this sort of this moment of reckoning where they make their way into a secluded, I guess, what is that, like a sewer?
Oh, yeah, it's part of Central Park. It's
processing,
like, yeah,
thing under the Jackie Onassis Reservoir or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. They have their showdown there.
Yeah.
On a spiral staircase in what looks like a sewer.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
And it's the beautiful briefcase moment. Like, if you look at the Pulp Fiction briefcase situation where it's like the big reveal is never seen, in this one you can imagine like it's just piles of diamonds and little,
but we know the exact value of it too,
right?
The whole scene with the jeweler where it's like, oh yeah, 15K a carat, and then there's like literally like thousands of diamonds in that briefcase.
Yeah, yeah, just like untold fortune. Yeah. That, ugh. And then you look at it and you think of like how much death that amounts to. And yeah. I thought that was like a really powerful image, just considering like this is the wealth that was accrued from the Holocaust.
Yeah. Yep.
And this guy, like this Nazi dude, can't live without it.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's so powerful. Yeah. It's really powerful.
It's a really great ending scene, much better than the book ending, at least as how it's described, is he shoots the Nazi twice and lectures him at the time. Much more like a much more, I would say, liberal friendly ending, as opposed to like turning the torture on him and then tossing all the money and all those countless Jews
super
away.
Liberal, because he also gets taken away by the cops.
Yes, he gets taken away by the cops. Instead, Babe, he gets away with it. He kills like five people and seemingly seems to get away with it. And I like that ending better.
Yeah. I love it when he just opens up the briefcase and then Babe starts chucking the diamonds at Zell and tells him to eat them. So cool.
And I took the time to look it up. Actually, eating diamonds is about 70% safe. And generally eating foreign objects is about 90% safe, but diamonds do have those hard edges. So you got the problem. But now when you eat each of those individual diamonds and you're not putting them in anything else, that probably compounds the difficulties you may potentially have swallowing all these diamonds. But actually swallowing diamonds, not many, but like one, is a primary way people try to steal them. They will, go to a jeweler, swallow it, and then try to walk out with it.
there's also... So I have this book, it's called The Poisoner's Handbook, and it's like a collection of all of the ways that you can, it's like the real offbeat ways of poisoning. But there was this thing that apparently you can do where you grind up a diamond into like this powder, and it's sort of like if you get it into somebody's food, or, if you somehow, like, blow diamond dust into someone's face, it actually works the same way that you would, like, kill a bed bug. So, like, the particles will go through natural tissues, and it just sort of, like, works its way all the way through a person until they're, like, organs split open and, like, and it, like, goes all through their veins and stuff.
That's terrifying.
I just think it's really cool.
That freaks me out a lot.
Oh, sorry. No, don't worry. It's really hard to crush up a diamond. That is like definitely not going to happen.
But yeah, it's a great movie. I know we're at the end of our episode here, so we should probably wrap up. But was there any other things that we were trying to get in before we wrap up?
I don't know. What do y'all? How do y'all feel?
You go ahead,
yeah.
Leslie.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, I really just enjoy this movie and this style of movie. I wish we had more, even if we had to set them all as period pieces, because cell phones and mass surveillance would just fuck them up. But yeah, I mean, I think that the performances are for the most part great. The storytelling is really tight. I like the way that it really does trust the audience to kind of pick it up and put it all together. I think as the best spy thrillers do, the best spy thrillers usually start with it all not really coming together until the second act exactly. What's going on now? This is not the sort of technique that you want to use when you're doing a 10-part episode of a TV show before a 2-hour movie where the audience is confused, a little bit confused with the first third. That's probably okay. And plus, even during that first third, we didn't know what was going on with Dustin Hoffman's character. We had a story. We knew his background. We know his past about his father. We knew he liked this girl. So we did have something to hold on to. And then we got some like cool action and fight scenes too, where his brother almost gets murdered in that Paris hotel, which was a really well done action scene. This is a really like good like genre film, and I don't think people, hopefully, you know, more people will watch after listening to this, because this is just one I never sat down and took the time to watch, but it's actually, you know, a real gem, I say.
Yeah, I really hope people go watch this. Like, oh, and I wanted to propose to y'all guys, The Prisoner, which is one of my favorite series ever.
Oh, word.
I absolutely love it. Yeah, and we don't normally do recap, watching and recap stuff, but what if we did The Prisoner? I think it would be great.
Oh, yeah. People love The Prisoner, yeah.
It's a fantastic 70s surreal spy show.
Sick.
And I'm wondering how the politics hold up now, but when I was younger, I loved it. I just like the sets, the colors. It's very weird.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of it.
But it's great, and I would love to rewatch it, because it's one of my favorites.
Well, how about it? We'll all reconvene for The Prisoner.
I really want to watch it. I know a lot of people have recommended it. Some of my favorite creatives love it. I think Alan Moore really likes it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's a date.
Let's do it. Yes. I mean, it's like 10 episodes long, but like I think it would be just... awesome.
Yeah. Let's talk off air, see what we can do. Maybe we do a collab kind of thing on it. Yeah, we are doing those mini series now, so let's see.
That would be cool. Did you know that I met Jack and Kate on the street randomly?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
It's very cool.
Should we just do a little closeout for the show, and then we can yuck it up?
Yeah. Let's do that. Go ahead. The listeners should know that too.
Cool. Is meeting celebrities, podcast celebrities. If you are a podcast celebrity on the street, be on the lookout for OK Fox. And thank you all for joining us for this super special crossover pod
struggle session, art and labor.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was awesome. I hope folks watch the movie and let's have fun, everyone.
Let's have fun.
I care if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you just drive a truck. I care if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care, cause I just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Lots of fun. Let's have fun.